This is Remote Ruby.
Have you any remote idea as to the meaning of the word?
Just the two of us.
It's so weird to record on Mondays. Is that just me, or?
It's weird to record on Mondays. It's weird to record without Andrew.
Yep.
Do you think Andrew is my hype man, or I am Andrew's hype man?
Can you be both? Or does that just cancel out all the hype? That might be.
We're hype men.
I'm jealous that we weren't hanging out with him and Drew doing old Grand Canyon things. Decent-sized canyon things.
I've been dropping these sweet grand tweets on everything he posts, and I'm getting no feedback.
You can send him, mail him 100 grand. People may not know that's a candy, I guess.
Look, I had a 100 grand candy bar recently.
They're good, but they're not popular or whatever. You don't see them that often. It's kind of like the Almond Joys and stuff. They're good, but they're not like mainstream.
I might like Almond Joys now. You know, for the longest time, I had a barrier, a self-imposed barrier up against them, but...
Because of the coconut or...
Oh, that's why I don't like it. Yeah, I don't like coconut. Nope, still won't like it.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you don't like them, you just pretty much forever will not like them.
I was thinking like it was the almond, but no, it's the coconut. Yeah, you can't. That doesn't work. That doesn't work for me. For that reason,
that and cucumbers, right?
Yeah, that and cucumbers and armadillos. So.
Well, good news, there's not a lot of cucumber or armadillo-based candies, so like you're pretty good, I think.
Right now.
Yeah, but I haven't read all the ingredients on everything, so like, you never know.
There's nothing more depressing for me than looking, well, there's a lot of things more depressing, but there's nothing for theatrical purposes more depressing than looking at a menu and like finding like, oh my God, that looks so good in the last ingredients, like cucumber, and you're like, oh!
Yeah, there are definitely times where you're reading a menu and you're like, oh, this sounds so good, and then one of the last things you're like, nope, deal breaker. Sorry.
I've been pedal to the metal back on job boardly, more so than usual.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I've
been keeping steady doing stuff. I have one of my customers, we talk pretty regularly about stuff. I run a lot of like suggestions and ideas by him and stuff. But I've been really trying to work on a way to give people more control over how their job boards look. It's a tough problem in that there's so many directions you can go.
Yeah.
And at Podia, like we have built a site builder and I do not want to do that again, especially on a personal project.
It's not just swapping out colors. It's like layout and
widgets
and components and things that you can organize and whatever. And what I'm curious, having built the advanced, most complex version for Podia, what is your personal side project version of the same thing?
So I thought I would take the same back-end concepts and just like tone them down.
Gem and Soul Podia. Yeah, gotcha.
And I didn't realize how much work I'd put towards it. But like I was like, okay, it's a little bit different from Podia's, but I was like, I'll do layouts. It's like you'll have a page. It's like you have a home page. It's a model. It's using STI like everyone should. And now that people are turning off this episode, I can share all the secrets. So it uses layout, this like layout concept that belongs to a page, and the layout has like different sections. And so that way you can like reorder them, and the sections store like metadata. So like there's a newsletter sign up form on Jobboardly, as you're aware.
Yeah.
And so if you want to reorder that, well, I'll make that a section. If you want to change the text, like that'll be metadata inside. And I was like, this is the way. And then, I don't know. I started looking at it. I was like, this is way too complex for a side project. So I removed most of that code this weekend. And I purchased, there's this, I think it's just a single person operation. It's Improbi. We'll link to it. But this guy makes editors and sells them. And so when I was working on Field Help, I had bought one of his WYSIWYGs to replace Trix. And he has one now that's called Article. And it's actually like a layout tool. And you can build custom sections, custom blocks. And so what I'm doing right now is like, so your homepage, I'm going to build like a newsletter sign up block and you can add as many as you want and you can reorder them. But like, it's all in this like little embedded JavaScript application. And then the complexity for me is instead of having to build the front and the back end, I'm having to do some work in the front end, but I'm basically just kind of building a very much smaller version of Action Text. Kind of like we did at Podia when we built our editor. That's JSON. This is HTML. So I'm basically kind of stealing the ideas. I think you and I talked about this when I was in St. Louis. I'm basically just like doing the same kind of things Action Text is doing in terms of like taking out attachments and things like that. But now if that works on the homepage, people can lay it out. You can do column layouts. And so in theory, like once I have like this filter thing built where you can filter jobs, you could like put that in like three columns and your job postings in six columns, things like that. So that's what I'm working on. And it's a fun really problem. Cool. Yeah. And then I hope to take it to like the rest of the, and that doesn't solve for like colors and stuff, right? This is just layouts, but I figure that's a good first step. And my thought is that I'll have themes. So like you'll have editing pages. It's like editing the layout and the structure. And then you could throw a different theme on it to like change the colors and kind of the feel.
I think a lot of people might think, oh, why not use Liquid or whatever? But giving Liquid to people pretty much requires a developer, and you're more or less like, here's the pre-organized components or whatever, but they've still got to write their own layouts and all that other crap and CSS and everything, which is not going to make it easy to use. It would be infinite flexibility in some sense, but
right,
it's not what you're actually going for.
And it requires a bit more support on my end, like making sure that it's wired up correctly and the appropriate data and variables are available. And this approach, I love the editor that I've purchased. Like, I love it. It's great. Storing HTML isn't my favorite thing to do in the world, but it works. And if I can get the feature out quicker with less technical debt, it is technical debt in one way. It's like I'm trading it for another, trading the idea of like building my own sections and stuff. But there was a lot of code there and it just felt like it already kind of ballooned and it wasn't necessarily the user experience I wanted still. This is more, you actually can see what you're doing on the page. And I like that.
Which makes sense. Your target customers are maybe more technical because you are technical and they found out about it through you or someone you know or whatever. But your end goal is to build a job board that you don't have to be a developer to go customize and everything. So it makes a lot of sense. And yeah, the interesting thing about saving it as JSON or whatever is nice that you can just say, oh, let's transform this into whatever structure we want in the HTML. It doesn't have to be strict as this is the HTML and this, the output you get is what you put in, except for those tricks attachments that are like, here's our custom HTML tag that would render invisible until we run it through the preprocessor or whatever that tricks does to do like app mentions or YouTube embeds and whatever. But even that's tricky because you do an YouTube embed. Well, in the final output, you want the iframe for the YouTube video there or a script tag and whatever to embed the video. But when you're editing that, you can't just drag and drop an iframe around. Right. So you need to like render a thumbnail or something that's not interactive on the editor version of it. And like, it's definitely trickier than it appears at first glance. Editors are hard.
Yeah, they are. This editor has built-in support for like embeds and stuff like that. And it just makes my life so simple. It's great. All that stuff that you try and build into tricks, it's difficult to do. It's not impossible, but it's not easy.
Yeah. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of progress being made on that. I don't know. Yeah. Assuming that there's probably still work being done on tricks internally at 37 Signals, but we're not seeing any of that publicly. So,
yeah. I knew when I started this project, like I was like, I'll use Action Text and I knew at some point I'll have to drop it. And
yeah,
it's just people immediately in the last like several side projects I've started, like when people start using it, they always ask for something that Trix doesn't have, whether it's like tables or some kind of like video embeds. And it's like, oh.
You may not be the best person to ask about this, but what is the difference between and Paravi's Redactor X and Article.
Yeah.
Because so when you click on them, the basically the demos look the same or whatever. Yeah, so they're both editors.
Redactor is more of like, think of like just pure WYSIWYG, like editing content, where Article is actually about laying out an entire page of content. So you get the grid stuff, things like that. It has a built-in responsive view, so you can see what it would look like on mobile in the Article version. Yeah, so it just comes with a little bit.
Yeah, just more like a, well, I don't know. It's like a superset of the other or whatever. Yeah, like exactly. It's everything Redactor does plus almost.
Yeah. Redactor X is actually just text editing. An Article is actually about text editing and laying content out.
Gotcha.
And so that's why Article is good for me, because then like it comes with like these custom blocks. And so I can just build like placeholder blocks. These are your job listings. You can't delete these or control these. Like, here they are, and you can move them around. Maybe there's some settings I can add for it. And I can just build that as like a, with, I'm hand waving here, like a few lines of JavaScript. And then when I go to render that out of
famous last words.
Yeah. When I go to render that, it's going to be madhouse. When I render that from the database, then I can like replace that placeholder with the actual content.
Yeah. Oh man, this looks cool. For what, $300 or whatever for Article, one time payment as well.
Yeah.
Pretty great. Yeah. I like
it. This is unrelated at all, but there's also, they have Revolve app, which is their email editor. And so it's like a WYSIWYG, but for email. And the nice thing is,
so the output of that will be HTML that's email like, compatible. Oh, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. So
I feel like the name particularly shouts email. So when I like looked at that in the nav bar, I just kind of ignored it, like assuming it's a mobile app or something. But oh, that's cool.
It's very cool. And then,
I mean, that makes sense for you too, right? You're going to be sending out emails eventually, making those customizable and having the like layout or whatever it is for the weekly job postings or whatever. Makes perfect sense to like use this. And that's cool to have like everything all from one source or whatever.
It's definitely on my list of when like I want to make emails customizable. It's almost like a no-brainer for me that I'll use that.
Yeah.
So he's released like a design system recently, and then he has a couple of books on design. I've always been impressed with it.
Yeah. I've been using
his products for several years now. It's worth the money, I think, in development time, and it's not a subscription. You just buy it and you got it. It feels like the old days. So
that's super nice. And it looks like it's well documented too, which is killer. Well
documented. Yeah.
Lots of good examples.
I dropped the JavaScript in the vendor directory and just imported it as a module. And
nice.
I wired it up with the stimulus controller and just let's go.
Oh, that's cool. Speaking of all this JavaScript, I don't do a ton of JavaScript, but last week we had some PRs in the past for like the Tailwind CSS stimulus components, just to build like tabs and basically all your core components that Bootstrap came with, tabs, modals, dropdowns, yada yada, popovers and stuff. And we had some like gnarly code in there that I had merged from some PRs to do animations and stuff. And I was like, we could totally just get rid of all the stuff and use like EL transition, which is our intentions to support primarily like the Tailwind UI components and Tailwind CSS stuff. And all that has like the entering from into leaving from into animations, where it like sets a transition, the duration, and then you say go from opacity 0 to 100 or whatever, vice versa for leaving. So this EL transition library is super simple. It's like very short, pretty understandable. And it basically is like, okay, we'll go add these classes. We'll wait for the next animation frame. We'll start the transition. Then we'll wait until the transition's done. And then we'll just remove that stuff and you're good to go. So I was like, oh, cool. I'm going to grab that. It's going to, I had really any updates for 3 years or something. So there's a couple of PRs that I like merged in to my fork, and we're going to use that in the Tailwind components library. and everything works wonderfully, except when I went to add transitions to the popovers and just have like you hover over the popover and it's like almost basically a tooltip. And it actually totally could be either way. It's like the mouse enter and mouse leave events turn it into a tooltip. Whereas if you click it and you use that action to show it, then it's a popover. And it's like people have almost the same exact component, but two different, totally different names, sound different, but they're basically the same. So I was like, oh, cool. I'll just show two examples and use different stimulus events to hide and show this. But what I didn't realize was like, generally it works perfect, except if you like happen to go over it a couple times pretty fast. If you hover and leave and hover again before the transitions have finished, the JavaScript animation library is like, it gets confused because when you do one of the events and start to trigger one, it keeps track of here's all the classes that are currently on there, which happens when it happens on the hover. So if you leave, it's got some of those animation classes still in there. And the next animation starts with those plus duplicates and stuff. And so I found myself where I'd like hover and it would show and then immediately hide and end up doing weird things because it's just keeping track of those classes in an odd way. And so like I was trying to figure out what the best approach for that would be. And I still haven't got a great solution. There's like Shoelace that Connor works on had some, they actually use like the animation, the keyframe stuff directly and apply those. Whereas that seems to work fine to like interrupt a transition. And then I also was reading the source code of the X transition stuff in Alpine, which maybe I should ping Caleb and see if he has any advice without pulling in all of Alpine. But their code is pretty clean, but the amount of nested callbacks and stuff to handle being interrupted anytime ever is pretty impossible. And I'm pretty much just like, all I need is a way when you start the transition to just like cancel and skip to the end of the previous transition that's currently running. And it's going to take some work to just get finalized or whatever, but you almost need like a mutex or something that's like, hey, hold on. These five events happened real close to each other, but let's at least kill the first one before we run the second one and whatever. And I'm not that good at JavaScript yet for some of those fancy asynchronous stuff. Or dealing with those at least, but yeah.
Yeah, so that's where I difficult. Kind of
like ended Friday on a frustrated note.
I've used that library you're talking about before because there was this time where I was like, I just want to use Stimulus. I didn't want to use Alpine. I had some rough edges similar to that, but they were different. I don't remember what they were, but Alpine, it's just rock solid in that way. Like you just give it the entering, enter, exiting, exit. And it's,
and that's what the demos use from Tailwind UI. So like, you know, it's quality, but he's got like three different variables to denote like different interruption. Cause you can interrupt like after you've just started the enter and then during the transition and whatever, before it's cleaned up or whatever, there's a whole bunch of situations that can cause it. So I fiddled with a few things and it was like, you pretty much just need some sort of like, I guess you can add, maybe the thing to do is just add, and it, actually this is what Alpine appears to be doing, is adding a custom property to the element itself that has an object that has like the undo callbacks on it and stuff. And so when the next transition gets triggered, it can actually look at that object and say like, oh, let's call the cancel function before we start hours and so on. But you basically need like some central place in order to store that. And it's like, well, you could either keep a, you know, a hash of those in a JavaScript variable of here's all my nodes and whatever, or just add a property to the element itself. So I think that's kind of what I'm going to do, is basically when you start the transition, we'll have it check itself. Do you have a cancel function? And if you do, we'll execute that and wait for it to finish, which is hopefully going to just like, hey, skip to the end. Because what I've seen, at least the browser was throwing an error saying like, user aborted this process when we're like waiting for the animation to finish. And I think it's because the other animation started or whatever. In theory, we can catch that exception. Just say like, okay, you're done. Don't raise an error. And then the other one can say like, oh, there's cancel callback still here because the old animation wasn't finished. So we can run that, put it in the final state. Because in theory, like if you're going from 0 to 100 opacity and you're like 50% through, it's like, okay, well, just cut it there and put it to 100. Or I guess you could be fancy and leave it at 50 and then put the opacity 0 and start the other direction transition. But I think it's easier if you're just like, oh, let's skip to the end because you've been interrupted here. Especially because like the entering and leaving states, if you go from 0 to 100 and you go the other direction, 100 to 0, it's not going to know that you were 50% of the way through the initial one to say when we're leaving, go 50 to 0. It's just got to really keep track of those. It's not that advanced of a transition animation system. It's just adding it and removing classes at specific timings. That's about it. So I think the way that Shoelace does it is like probably the ideal one, where it's like 100% based on the state of the transition, the keyframes or whatever that it's currently at, and it could undo properly or fully like from the middle state maybe. I don't know enough about how it worked, but I was like, yeah, this turned out to be a huge pain. And then I think it was Friday or this weekend, I was still thinking about it and I was like, you know, what if we just turn the popover duration to like 100 milliseconds or less? Because it's a popover. You pretty much expect it to show up and disappear immediately. And that's what our old code actually did before I added animations. There was no animation for the popovers. And I was like, well, I've made this problem for myself and I could just pretend that we don't have animations for that. But I was trying to do it all properly. If anybody uses Stimulus, use that library. It has the same fork of EL transition that they've used there. You can see all the class names and, or the variable names and stuff are pretty much the same and it's the exact same thing. But that applies to the element that you add the controller to, whereas in a modal, side note, if anybody hasn't watched Adam Wathen's keynote at Tailwind Connect, where Sam Selikoff was showing off some amazing stuff, one of the things Adam showed was the modals that he wanted, where if you were on desktop, he wants it to like scale up 5 or 10% in the middle of the screen. But on mobile, he wants to slide up from the bottom with no scaling. And he's able to like do that really creatively with some cool Tailwind stuff, which I would love to have to be implementing that too. But that was an example where like the modal backdrop and the modal content itself have to have two different animations, and like Stimulus use just applies to the element itself that the controller's on. So like can't use that, but it's also got the same problems because we use the same library behind the scenes. But I can at least like for our modal say when you open the modal, trigger the backdrop animation and the content animation. Those could be totally separate things, which is nice. All that to say, I hate JavaScript. It's not the animation so much, but I just don't know.
Front end dev.
I felt bad. Like that was an open source project. This kind of sat and wallowed a little bit. This was a big reason why I hadn't really worked on it too much, because things got, you should see how much code I was able to delete from the old versions. I also threw away microbundle and compile it now with ES build for modern imports and CGS, CommonJS. I don't know all these different, we used to have like 5 or 6 different output files for like AMD, UMD. I don't know all this stuff in JavaScript. I'm like, can we just all use ES modules from now on? And I got rid of some of that stuff because I was like, I don't think anybody's using it. And all our instructions say use like the ES6 modules. And you're going to be using this with Stimulus and probably Hotwire and whatever, Tailwind. So you're probably fine with modern JavaScript. But yeah.
That's a ride that I don't want to be on.
Hey, me neither.
If you're like most devs, too much of your time gets sucked up with downtime issues, troubleshooting, and error tracking. How can you spend more time shipping code and less time putting out fires? Honey Badger is how. It's a suite of monitoring tools especially for devs. It's the only system that combines error monitoring, uptime tracking, cron and heartbeat monitoring into a single, clean, fast interface. Sure, you could get familiar with any interface, but why waste your time learning some Franken-system interface that looks like an airline cockpit when what you need is clarity and speed? You won't know if Honey Badger will really save you time and trouble until you see how it works in your own toolchain. With 2 lines of code and 5 minutes, you can see for yourself. Honey Badger automatically hooks into popular web frameworks, job systems, authentication libraries, and front-end JavaScript. Imagine fixing errors before your users could even report them. 5 minutes of your time with a free trial is all it will take to see if it works for you. It just might be the best 5 minutes you've spent in a while. Check it out at honeybadger.io.
In a simpler vein, but in the same area, I've changed my mind once again back to when building forms with Tailwind and Rails, going back to the custom form builder approach. I had ebbed back to where I was like, I'll override label and input in the CSS file and I'll just use apply. And it worked really well until it didn't. I got too clever. I got way too clever in some spots and it started biting me. In Jobwordly, I have a merchant, like the back end, and then the storefront, like the board. And so I have a board form builder and a merchant form builder, and they're separate. And so I can control the styles on those levels. For colors and stuff on the board, I use CSS variables with Tailwind, but I don't use those on the back end versions. Like I just keep them split now.
Yeah.
Like, I refactor that. It's so much cleaner and I'm happier with it. And it's less clever. It's more just.
Is the. Not being a CSS expert, this may be a basic thing to know, but is your CSS class for a label more specific or less specific than the label with a class to override, say, your font bold with font medium or something? I can't remember which is which.
A label with a class would be more specific.
If you have like the Tailwind font medium, but the label had add apply font bold.
Oh, that, I think add font bold wins. I think because there were several times I had to use the important selector, like the Tailwind bang with.
So if you did the add apply on the label, that's more specific or whatever. And so then that takes priority. It makes sense or whatever.
There were certain cases for sure I had to do that.
It depends on how you specified it in your CSS file and add applied. Yeah.
But it was mostly just like raw inputs.
I can understand like now why Adam is like, yeah, don't add apply. Because it almost ends up with the same reason why I didn't enjoy Bootstrap was, okay, you want to customize this button. You got to undo a lot of stuff to make that button look the way you want. And so then it's like, well, why did we even start with the button class at all if it's going to apply so many of these things? So you're like at the same point, okay, let's start from scratch with no CSS and then build up to what we need, as opposed to like with Bootstrap trying to undo the default styles. And the same issue happens when you add apply too much and then you've got to go like undo things. It does get super weird though when you're like, I have a button, I have a link, I have a header, I have all headers, and they're all just look like a paragraph tag or a plain div. Like when you start with Tailwind, you're like, are you kidding me? There's not even like regular sizes or default sizes or no bullets or numbers next to lists. And you're like, this is very strange. But that's kind of why we like in Jumpstart, we provide all those like defaults, but then you don't want them, just delete them. And then you can start from scratch or whatever. But I want to save you some time. So we like reset them all with Tailwind and then we redefine them consistently across all browsers at least. But it's a fine line and it really depends on like, what are your design goals? Like if you've got a designer and you need to do something crazy different than we've got, go for it. Get rid of all our CSS and start from scratch. But if you're just winging the UI together like I do and grabbing Tailwind components and whatever, then having all those defaults is really handy because you don't have to do that every single element that you're trying to add.
But yeah, I feel like I'm still learning how I best want to use Tailwind with Rails, because Tailwind really thrives in component based projects, and like Rails doesn't ship with components.
Speaking of, I'm super excited about this. I don't think we talked about this. The other day, as I'm working on the JavaScript library, I'm like, hey, you know what? We need components with the Rails side of things. Partials are too simple, like a modal. You can't specify, here's the footer, here's the header and all that. So I was like, you know, view component and stuff is, there's a lot of functionality there and I just don't need it. But I was like, how hard can it be to like build a basic component system? So I'm going to have to pull this up. It was freaking cool.
It's a banana, Michael. How much could it cost? $10.
Yeah, $10. Basically, I wrote an application component. So when view component kind of got nixed from being like an official feature of Rails, what they did actually add to Rails was the render in. So you can just say render and give it any object. And as long as it responds to render in, that render in will be given the view context, which is where the output buffer for your HTML is. So I have a little application component. It has the render in method. We save the view context and then we yield ourselves so that in your view, you could say render modal component do component. And then it yields itself to that block. And then that block can go call methods on your component. So you can just assign variables there. So then we have a class method for slots. And you just say, I have a slot for a modal title, modal content, modal footer. And then each of those slot get defined dynamically with defined method. And they're one of my favorite things about some code. A lot of times you like have to assign with an equals and say, assign this with the setter. I actually did the getter method, but if you give it a block, it captures what's in the block. And if you just call it without a block, it returns the value. So it's kind of a combo getter, setter, and a single method. And then it just defines that. And then after it finishes yielding, you basically went and assigned all these instance variables inside the component. And then it just calls render partial path on the component. So if it's a modal component, it just knows that it's under AppViews components, modal component or whatever, .html ERB, and boom, you're done. And it's like 38 lines of code right now for components and Rails. That's it. It's wild. So yeah, it's just one of those things where you're like, if you don't need all that extra functionality, like sidecar JavaScript and whatever else, you can do all kinds of things with pure Ruby and make your own things. And what's nice about this is like, I'm sure there's like some warts or whatever that we'll get into like using it, but it's like, it's 40 lines of code. And the majority of that is defining these dynamic slot adder accessors more or less. And that's it. And it's like, well, logically, we don't need anything more than this. You can also make this work side by side with view component too. So if you want to do fancier things, be my guest, but you can really surprise yourself when you're like treating Rails as another gem, like another interface just to work with. But like at the end of the day, I'm just a Ruby developer and I can make this cool little wrapper around basically the action view. And that's it. And you can do whatever you want. I don't know. It's one of those things where I was like, I wonder how hard this could be. Cause I know Joel works very hard on view component and he's been spending a lot of time on it. And I was just curious, what's the most minimal thing to do here? And looked at his syntax, basically cloned it for simple stuff at least. But yeah, I was like, wow, you'll surprise yourself with like, yeah, if you want to do something simple, you can accomplish that in probably fewer lines of code in Ruby than you'd think normally. So I don't know. Just a fun little challenge to see, like, can I pull this off? And I've always liked those throughout my like career to figure out, am I learning? Am I getting better? And having a little challenge of like, can I do this in 2 hours? And
right.
Yes, no, maybe. They help me kind of judge if I'm learning or not or whatever. It's just something I've like always done. When I was like in school or something, I was like, I wonder if I can build an IRC client with sockets. Because I've never used sockets. So I did that and I was like, wow, that wasn't that hard. Building a whole IRC client actually kind of hard, but connecting to IRC with your CLI script, not too bad. You know, those little things where you're like, I've never experimented with this stuff before. Let's see how it goes. Go give it a shot. But yeah. Anyways.
That's awesome. That's fun.
Yeah, I'll have to post the snippet of code for that because it was just strangely simple. And then my modal component is inherit from the application component, slot header, slot content, slot footer, and then whatever HTML you put inside those blocks in your view, rendered out there. And you could either render a partial if you wanted, or you could just like combine all the content with Ruby and just do like a join or plus, add the variables together because it's already the captured output. So you totally just add it together. That's it. That was my first thing, was like, grab the title and the body and add them together. And then I was like, okay, cool. And then you can do translations because you're already in the view and it'll find them and whatever.
That's awesome. I love components. I love view components. I love hearing you talk about building your own components, component library. The thing like I struggle with, it's been forms. These like things that like view component doesn't work well with forms. I don't know the exact reasons why.
If you don't, Julian, oh, I forget his last name, starts with B. We'll have a link to his blog, but he wrote that 3-part series recently and got a PR into Rails 7.1 with the select tag improvements. He was basically writing about this exact issue. And it's like, well, they were pretty tightly written towards views and just stock Rails stuff, but they're like super duper old and they just haven't really evolved at all. And it's been just dealt with as opposed to refactored and improved.
I would adopt view component and just make like input components.
Right.
But the form builder approach, you override the base form builder and you call super, but you can give it your own tail end classes. And then what I've done is like, when you want like that little, like you have a currency input, you want the currency symbol as the prefix and the currency ISO code is the suffix.
Yeah.
That's where I had gotten kind of cute with the pure CSS approach. And I'd be like, if there's a leading span or a trailing span next to the input, like style it. And then I needed to add help text under an input one day and I did it in a span. And I was like, oh, why does this look so bad? Oh, because it's trying to make it a suffix. Where now, like as a Rails form builder, I just like text input prefix, just as a Ruby keyword argument. And then I just check, is there a prefix? Here's the HTML we need to generate, template.content tag. It's not the cleanest, but it is traceable, it's readable, and it's fine.
Yeah. This is again like the building the components that quickly, like you could more or less build your own form builder in an equivalent amount of time. And instead of using all the fancy tag helper things that Rails gives you, you can build your own and have that just output the HTML. One of the things I always found fascinating watching CJ Avila write Rails apps was like, he never uses any of the Rails form things ever. He writes his forms. Really? And all of that is plain HTML. He writes his inputs and everything and doesn't use any of that stuff. And I was like, oh, this is weird. I've never seen anybody not use them. And there are a few niceties, right? Like there is, when you say form.submit, the automatic default text is going to do an if statement and see if this is a new record or a persisted record. And it's going to change and say create blog post or save blog post or update blog post, whatever. And there are a few of the niceties. The same thing applies for the form action. The URL that it goes to will be slash blog posts or update blog post slash one or whatever the ID is. But like, that's a couple if statements. The form builder saves a reference to the original record that you passed in or an array. And it knows that if you have an array, then the last object is the one that you're actually making the form for. So it can ask for attributes from that. The array of things gets passed to URL for, so it can do polymorphic URLs and do like nested stuff for generating the URLs. So like to rebuild a basic, a very simple like form object thing, a form builder would be like not super hard. So you could totally take the same approach and like make an object that has render in, and you could say render custom form builder and have that. That could be your magic. But in theory, some of this stuff will be greatly improved in Rails going forward too. So maybe you won't have to do that, but it is one of those things where I feel like a lot of Rails developers just kind of, here's the tools I've got. Nothing really quite does what I need. So I either got to just abandon them or whatever, but you can make your own tools, I think, is the lesson learned here. It's like, if you watch somebody who's in construction or whatever, like I just watched the Perkins Builder Brothers made a, they were screwing a fence post into a deck and they needed a way to drill like a very shallow pocket hole in it. And he ended up just welding a piece to a drill bit way down the drill bit because he couldn't get that steep of an angle to cut. And yeah, he just like made his own drill bit, you know? And it's like, we can definitely do the same things. And just looking at what Rails gives you is like a fraction of what's possible. So remember that and treat it that way or whatever. If you're a beginner Rails developer, you're more a Ruby developer than you are a Rails developer. You just may not feel like it.
It's funny to hear you say CJ just uses like pure forms. I hadn't thought about that in a while. That, if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure that's like the Laravel approach too, is they give you tools you need. So Blaze are templating language. And so there's like a like CSRF token you can use inside a Blade template to like output the CSRF token. But yeah.
And there's a helper for that in Rails too. So
yeah,
you might use FormWith because it automatically includes it. And that way you don't forget. But do you need to? No, totally not.
Yeah. I forgot all about that because I'm pretty sure in the early versions of Laravel, they had like a form builder like thing. And then like pretty early, and then they just moved away from it. And but the way you get inline errors is nice with Laravel because there's like an error bag or something like that. And you're just like, if the error bag has this property, like
I heard airbag. I was like,
airbag.
So when the car gets in an accident,
crashes,
you take the airbag. You disperse all the errors from the airbag.
Isn't that what a failed validation is? It's just a car wreck.
It's like this podcast. Got him.
All right. See ya.
No, that's super awesome. I love hearing that because it's almost like, you know what we did? We just over-engineered the shit out of forms. You know why? Because I used to see Formtastic and Simple Form and stuff like that used way too much. And now, like, maybe it's just apps that I'm working on, but like I don't see them referenced near as much, and that's a good thing. There's a lot of stuff that we can use in the browser that if we're just like, oh, we're just trying to abstract away everything, then you can't actually take advantage of a lot of those things. And it's just one of those things that the Simple Form and Formtastic were just, hey, what if your form was just form to this record and then field, no options, no nothing, just pure magic. And like, you know what, if you're building an admin UI, that might work. But if you're building anything real for customers that actually needs to be intuitive to look at and interpret, like putting in money or anything like that, where you got to put in a subdomain for your Shopify store, like you need the prefix and postfix, and you need help text sometimes and not others. And what do you do if you've got help text and an error message? Do you do the inline error message? Do you need to put it in a different place? And there's just like reality comes at you fast. And it's like, none of that ever was going to actually build good UIs, and it abstracted too much, but it could be really convenient for some admin thing or whatever. You don't care about it, but like, we spend a lot of time building user-facing stuff, and that's just not an option most of the time.
Yeah, and that was something I was thinking about when I was talking about how Laravel moved away from it. They also embrace being able to use like Inertia and React and Vue, like front ends. And so like they still have wonderful support for like just server.
We need Schwad to start past Laravels and find us articles of when they moved away from the reform builder things.
I'm pretty sure I could be making all this up, but I'm pretty sure back in the day, I remember seeing that, like when I was trying to learn.
Early
days.
It makes sense when DHH talks about like conceptual compression. There are certain things you can compress, but there are not a lot of things that can be compressed. It's an interesting thing because there's a lot of like, okay, you're going to build web apps. Well, Rails can basically abstract rack. And yet, many times where you still need to interact with headers and whatever else, set your default formats or whatever it might be. The controller helpers for fresh when and the e tags and whatever else. And it's like, well, Rails can abstract a lot, but you're still just manually messing with headers sometimes. And it's like, well, in theory, building web apps, you wouldn't have to think about that maybe ever, but you still have to have those abstractions, but an easy way to drop right down to the absolute low level. In this case, it's still very high level, but you need the combination. You got to have your sledgehammer and your, like, I don't know, tiny hammer.
The old tiny hammer trademark.
Yeah. There's a guy on YouTube that we used to watch that does cooking videos, and he's got like a tiny whisk, like a very tiny whisk that's basically kind of useless. And he'll like sometimes get that. He has a tattoo of it now, but it was like, you could use the giant whisk or you could use the tiny whisk. But yeah, I'm going to have to get a tiny hammer now. It's an interesting thing. And I feel like I learn a lot about browser things from Adam. Like some of the stuff that they have, I forget they had slide up and down as they're like animations for the modal stuff for mobile. And what's really cool about what they're doing is like, used to feel like he literally made a CSS class for every CSS option. And it was like, this is dumb. But now you look at it and you're reading, it's like transition. And transition actually is like three or four properties. And it's like, this can transition any of these things and whatever. It's, if you don't know the specific thing you're doing, just opacity, you just slap transition on it. And then you say like, slide up, slide down, whatever. And it's gotten to be like its own little abstraction over these sort of micro combinations of CSS properties and stuff. And I'm digging it, especially watching his keynote. Everybody should go watch that if they haven't, because the stuff that Sam shows off there and what Adam shows off, and it's neat.
Yeah. And yeah, a lot of cool like performance improvements and like taking all the
Rust. Yeah. Rust stuff. Yeah.
And the side.
Yes. And the configuration file basically disappearing and everything. Yeah. Oh, so good. It probably had these things been there when version 1 came out, like probably would not have gotten the sort of very divided response that it has gotten over time. But I had my complaints where I was like, you mean I got to go add this purge CSS thing and use post CSS and do all this configuration? Gosh. Like early days of Tailwind were painful. But now,
big style sheets I shipped.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was like 22 megabytes if you forgot to purge stuff and you had like all the colors enabled. And it was like, yeah, you know what's good? Not doing that and going the complete opposite. And we only generate whatever you used and we require you to tell us what files. But it's like, they're going to figure out what files and folders. I'm not even sure how that works. He didn't explain how it interprets where your Tailwind lives and it magically can figure out where the classes and stuff live. I'm going to be excited to see that, because it'll just, no configuration. You don't really need it for most things. You got nesting and whatever, and the Rust executable will be slick.
Yeah, it was like, it was fast. It's good. I'm excited. Hopefully be more stuff to like read and digest out of that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if he was asking for other people on the team or a ticket for himself, but sounded like he's hoping to go to Rails World. So that'll be fun to go chat with him again there if he makes it. Yeah, man. It was good catching up on a Monday.
Yeah. Yep. Miss Andrew, but well, he'll be back.
Is he still Grand Canyoning? and stuff.
Him and Drew are just setting all kinds of records for arrest warrants in Arizona.
Yeah. This is the most wanted Oklahoma man in,
in the U.S. history. Oh, fantastic. All right. Good to chat. We'll catch up soon.
Sounds good. Later.